All right, if you're anything like me, you hate running out of food on a trip. It's like a big fear. And so I'm a big fan of snacks during an adventure. And one of my absolute favorite go-to snacks are Wonderful Pistachios. You may be familiar with pistachios and the brand Wonderful Pistachios, but if you're not, they are one of the highest protein nuts out there. 1 ounce serving of Wonderful Pistachios is 6 grams of protein. That's 10% of your daily value. It also includes 9 essential amino acids, and they come with a ton of different flavors, varieties. There's a spicy version, there's lightly salted, there's no salted, there's so many. And every time I go on an adventure, I'm not even lying, I take an entire bag with me. And what's cool too, I love having the Wonderful Pistachio in shell, because then that almost gives me something to do and focus on as I'm paddling or biking through the really monotonous parts of the adventure. Every great adventure is going to have plenty of boring moments, and it's nice to have something to do and also something that is giving you some fuel, like Wonderful Pistachios. So they're one of my favorite adventure snacks, favorite road trip snacks, and definitely leave me feeling better than a lot of other snacks you can turn to. So if you want to learn more about how to fuel your next adventure with Wonderful Pistachios, go to WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. Getting this up a little late this week. I had some work to do, but we had our film premiere at Athletic Brewing called Inches to Miles, and it was awesome. Had a bunch of the community come out. It was over in Oceanside, California. It will be on tour. We're taking it around the country. I'll be in Chicago next month in May, Indianapolis, and then up near New York City, just outside near in Connecticut, but within an hour's drive of New York. So if you're around those places in mid to late May, please come by. I'd love to meet you. I'm going to be doing some presenting ahead of the screenings, and then the film screening, and then some Q&A after. And it should be a good time. But today's episode, Bo Miles, this is a throwback to 4 years ago. I cannot believe we talked that long ago. But this was when Bo was really starting to take off in the sense of dedicating himself fully to his YouTube channel, where he makes these little mini documentaries about some crazy premise of an adventure, whether it's, you know, for the most recent ones, I'll just read it. Walking 90 kilometers to work changed my life. That was 3 days ago. For 3 days, all I ate was pumpkin. I assume while out on an adventure, my longest run, eating beans for 40 days straight. Like, he's got so many of these wild, weird ideas. Some of the most memorable ones that were out by the time we had this conversation was running a marathon 1 mile every hour. And what's so cool is you see the premise of the show, but once you learn Bo's style, you realize, okay, there's a lot of life lessons in here. There's a lot of storytelling. There's a lot of just really well put together stories within these seemingly very bizarre challenges that wouldn't have to do with that stuff. And so I'm a huge fan. The channel has exponentially grown. I watch every video he comes out with, and this was a great conversation. So, the highest compliment I think I've ever received was, hey, you're like the American Bo Miles, only because I have a red beard like he does. I think the similarities really stop there. But anyway, enjoy. Sorry for getting this up late. We'll be coming at you Monday with a brand new episode. Hey, folks, welcome to the show. Having someone on that I've been wanting to have on for a while, just been a fan on YouTube, been a subscriber for a while now, Bo Miles. Bo, welcome to the show.
Mason, thanks for having me. It's the Aussie-US connection, mate. You're one side of the world in one time zone, and here I am down here down under, and it's nice to be talking to an American.
I don't get that a lot, but yeah, you're welcome, man. It's great.
Well,
to be
I like you, Yanks. I spent 10 summers over in Vermont, and I really miss the place. You know, I used to be there every year for 3 to 6 months, and yeah, I love it. I'm very fond of the joint.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah, U.S. has got a lot, you know, and I love talking. We've had a lot of Australians on the show. Australia is one of our top, I think, 5 countries with listenership of the show, and I honestly hear from folks all the time. I'm just commenting on stuff or on Instagram, so I think this is going to connect with some folks that already listen. They'll be like, "Oh, Bo, we know Bo."
Yeah, right.
So that's cool, man.
They should tell me about him. I don't know myself very well,
hey.
So I think it's funny. People say that, and I think, well, you should give me a hand sometimes because I'm trying to figure myself out.
Man, I tell you what, from your projects, You're doing some self-discovery, to say the least, especially that the human bean project. I showed my dad that because, I don't know, we talk about beans a lot in the family just as a joke. Like, you know, for dinner, we're just going to have a can of baked beans or something. So I sent him your video, and he loved it. He thought it was just the craziest idea. And so I'll tell folks a little bit about that in the intro. But, man, honestly, I'd like to go all the way back. You said you before we recorded, you said you dropped your kid off with your mom. So I assume you live close to home or close to where you grew up.
Yeah. So I'm 5 kilometers between parents. So my parents divorced when I was a little thing. And then they sort of fragmented a bit. Well, mum did. Dad always stayed on the farm. But mum's returned. She's come back. She's got a sort of a holiday shack just up the road. So I'm really lucky. I've got dad 5K down the hill and mum 5 kilometers over the other side of the hill. And yeah, we've got these ready-made babysitters that just love having May, and we love them having May. So it gets us sort of breaks up our work week a bit because Helen works from home, and well, hell, the whole of Australia is working from home at the moment. But
right.
Got the little, yeah, I'm family orientated and right smack in the middle of it.
Man, that's awesome. You know, I love talking to folks in your position just because I don't know how it is in Australia, but, you know, kind of the adventure, maybe it's just me or maybe there's people I talk to, but the adventure culture here, it's almost this pressure, you know, you get out of school and you go off on these adventures and you go plant roots somewhere really incredible, really picturesque, really, you know, where your adventures take place, essentially. And I did that for a while. But I recently, literally a couple weeks ago, moved back to basically be in your position. And so I love essentially talking to somebody a little farther down that road than I am. But yeah, man, so did you grow up, you know, you lived in this area. I know you traveled all over the world. What did you grow up doing? Did you grow up doing adventures? Did you have a family that encouraged that? Or did you just kind of have it in your blood?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're not the first to ask this sort of, people really like to dig into your pre-adult life, I think, because, you know, if there's an ounce of inspiration out there in my storytelling, people want to know where it comes from or where I get my inspiration from to do stuff. And, you know, I mean, the short answer to that is I have no idea. But the long answer would be, or to start the long answer would be that, you know, I had an amazing childhood and growing up experience of just being a sort of, well, an absolutely regular kid, but I was always pretty curious, but I was never overly adventurous, not really. You know, I sort of grew up on small acreage and dad is an artist, mum is a gardener, nurse, and truckloads of cousins and lots of sort of family events, and school was fairly pivotal. You know, I loved sport and school, and it was just, it was an absolutely plain Jane childhood, which was excellent. You know, it was, there was no big shakes about it. So, look, I think that the whole, the bug bit, I think, when my stepmum and my dad and my mum and my whole family sent me or gave me the green light to go and study history in Israel and Germany when I was 17. And that was it. That was my first time overseas. And I went over there and my eyes were on Springs. And I thought, wow, this world is remarkable. You know, this is all the books I've ever read rolled into one in an hour. You know, it was incredible. And it sort of untapped something and there was no going back.
I hear that a lot. It's a simple experience. You know, anything that Australian fire, what did it start with? It started with a spark, you know. Unfortunately, it went in the bad direction, but that's all it takes to get this life going, to get kind of the trajectory heading in the direction that you've followed. It is just an experience like that. So it was that experience at 17, just seeing a new part of the world, a place you've never been. Then what started going from there? Did you just start taking more opportunities? And when did it start to turn into these pretty wild adventures?
Well, that's just it. You know, even now when I think about, look, I don't think I've done anything wild. I think I've been quite conservative my whole life still, you know. I know that when I am taking risks, I feel it. And that's pretty rare. You know, I know that for the most part, I'm operating within my skill set. And if I'm at the edge of that, I very much know it. And I don't tend to go there all that much. You know, I'm not that sort of thrill seeker that wants to be sort of a boundary pusher. But then maybe, you know, and herein lies the kind of conundrum of life. I suppose I lived with the world extreme skiing champion for a few years, on and off. She was living with my sister and I was basically living on and off with my sister. And her name's Andrea Binning. And I'd go out snowboarding while she skied. And, man, she was so incredible. You know, she'd do these pop-offs of cornices and cliffs and just an amazing skier. And yet she was just so damn good at it that was her competency, you know. So I've come to realize too that, you know, if you sea kayak a bit and you can go for a long run or you can build things, or you've just got a skill set. And when you operate within them and sometimes you sort of nudge the edges, then you feel fantastic. You know, I suppose the difference is too, I tell stories about these things I go and do. So people think that what I'm doing is far out, but in really, all it is that I'm the one telling stories about it. I'm taking a camera with me because I think a lot of people do more remarkable things. They just don't tell anyone.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. It really is. The world is the oyster to the people who are willing to share it, you know? Because I talk to so many adventurers that there's maybe one thing online about them. They don't have any social. And the longer you talk to them, the more you learn. And it's like, this person's incredible, but nobody knows them. You know, their family, their immediate family knows what they've done, but that's it. And in a way, it's great. But in another way, they're missing out on so much inspiration they could be spreading.
Yeah, that's right. And look, depends what they're doing it for, you know. Think of how many amazing people out there that aren't doing adventurous things. You know, they might just be great gardeners or might be a good sketch artist or a doodler, or they write poetry on their own, or they... Who knows? They just do things. They're a hobbyist of some kind, and it looks good and it feels good and it's a wonderful hobby. I totally get it that doesn't need to be anyone but your own. In some respects, you know, I do respect a lot of people that do their own stuff for only themselves. And so I worry about my ego when I go out and try and tell a story and think, well, who gives a dang about my story, you know? But I suppose it's become work and I enjoy that and people don't have to watch. So you think, all right, well, there's something worthwhile in that. And you're only getting better at what you're doing anyway. So then the ego gets taken out of it, the better at it you get in a sense. And so that's a good thing. And that's what I'm in the game of now.
Yeah. That's also an interesting point about ego. You know, that's it can start to get to you, but you know, speaking of sharing and getting, you know, kind of the word out there about your adventures, what inspired you to start capturing what you're doing? Because as folks know now, as they heard in the intro, you're primarily known for, I found you through YouTube, and I'm sure you hear that all the time, and you've got millions of views on your channel, and you've done some cool things through that. What inspired you to start capturing it that way? Because I find a lot of people who love adventure maybe hate that side of it, having to film stuff all the time.
Yeah, and you're not the first to ask that. And it's probably the most poignant question, really, because I get it and I'm with it. Every time the question gets asked, I go, oh, yeah, it's a good point. I could film a lot more about my life and what I get up to. And you know, I'm now in sort of partnership with a filmmaking buddy and him and I, and he's so good because he's lots of things I'm not, you know. He'll want to film lots and lots of things, and he has a far more conservative approach, I suppose, whereas I'm sort of a bit more outlandish and a bit more impulsive. But in terms of, you know, does filmmaking get in the way of a great time outside, or, you know, does it burst the bubble of being present in whatever you're doing? And I agree, absolutely. And so I sort of pick what I film now, and I could film a lot more and make more films, but then your whole life just becomes a story of filming and chopping up and filming and chopping up. And I don't want to ruin it for myself either. I love times when I don't have the camera on me, and that's more times than not. And I don't know whether I'd want it to be more times. But I'm pretty good now with knowing when it's work and when it's a story, and you know, I'll shoot the heck out of everything, and that's kind of comes with the territory. And I'm only getting better at being more myself when I'm on as well, you know, when the camera's on.
Right. That's great. That's a great answer. And you know, folks also know that you teach essentially what, adventure or outdoor leadership as well. You're a professor.
Yeah. Well, did. The course was shut down in December. So, with me. So I could have stayed on at the university, or potentially stayed on at the university and taught in other areas of sustainability education or whatever. But no, I decided to leave and be a full-time filmmaker. So I'm just using the year to throw myself at that and get as much content up as possible, which is always slower than you think it will be, but it's coming along.
Oh man, was that hard to close the program out?
It was horrible, mate. Yeah, I was either there as a student or as a teacher for the most of its life. It was a 20-year program, and I was there as a student for a couple of years and then went off and did things and then was as a staff member there for almost 12 years. So I loved it. It was very much a part of my identity. And so it was a shattering day it's taken a while to sort of get over that. But, you know, I was pretty realistic about it, and I've seen it for what it is. And now, you know, looking back at 6 months ago, it's great. You know, I'm on a better trajectory now, and I'm in for it. I miss outdoor education, to be a professional in a world that's not just about putting myself out there, you know, giving back to students a bit more, or being part of a community. You know, I don't feel like I'm part of a community as a filmmaker, one iota. I feel like it's just me peddling my ego and going and doing great fun trips and storytelling. But I've got to get over that too, because there's worth in that. So I'm maturing into this new role I've become.
Yeah, I hate to hear that on one hand. It sounded like such a great, just an incredible, first off, opportunity, but also just a program to teach young people about this. And so, yeah, that's tough, man. What do you think the things you've done and the things you taught and outdoor leadership has prepared you for pretty much the sudden ending of it, if that makes sense? You know, we talk about principles of leadership and stuff on this podcast, and then, yeah, you know, people talk about adventure and want adventure until it happens to them.
Yes. Well, that's good. Yeah, look, I don't mind adversity. In a sense, I kind of, in some respects, encourage it. I don't mind, you know, I give blood, not just because I think I'm an okay human, but I do it too because I like the mortality of having my arm struck with a needle. You know, I think I don't mind injuring myself or cutting my hand if I'm out there working hard. You know, I like to feel, I suppose, pain. You know, I'm not a masochist. I'm not going down the wrong pathway here, but I like the broad spectrum of life, and I don't mind being pushed into a corner or when things don't go right. And so I think I took the news pretty well and thought, okay, well, this is going to happen and there's not much I can do about it. So just move on. And I'm a bit of a spilt milk kind of guy too. You know, once I realize that I can't have control over it anymore, then all right, I'm going to work around it. I'm going to go get a mop and fix this or whatever, you know, or fix what I can. So
do you think you'll be at a point that you'll be happy that it happened, or are you already there?
Yeah, I think I'm there, Mason. I think definitely I think I'm there. I still miss the program, but then knowing that the program is really not in existence at the moment, it's limping through with, you know, a couple of great people that are still at the university under contracts to sort of see it through. But there's no one there. You know, it's a coronavirus lockdown and it's outdoor education happening on a screen. So it's kind of perverse anyway. So I'm glad they're doing that, not me. The poor buggers, you know, the poor students who are having to limp through this one sort of hybrid year they've been given, you know, it doesn't have an ounce of adventure in it. And they can read as many books and have a wonderful online content, but they're still not out sitting around a fire or paddling down a river somewhere and experiencing the world in another way. So, yeah, anyway, new chapter and I'm into it, and the little baby's helping with that, and life's good.
I don't know how it is for you, but for me, I can look at my son and think, I've got to do everything I said I would do. You know, I've got to do everything that I promised myself that I would do, so that he can see that, and he can say that he can do it too, you know?
Yeah, that's a really nice way of thinking of it. You know, we kids do that. They're the best perspective puller ever. And look, I'm new at this. We've got a 9-month-old. I always suspected that when May came along, I could take a backseat on myself a little, you know, that I'm not the headline act anymore in my own world. And so that's nice. I think it makes it's once again, it's just another priority puller. You know, you've got less time in your life. 168 hours a week now gets divided by essentially 1.5 people. You know, you and your wife, you share this other human. And so you just got less hours. So you got to be poignant with what you do with your hours. And yeah, I don't mind that either. You know, that's, and you've got, you're so much more wealthy for it because you've got this little bundle of, you know, human. It's awesome. It's been great.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode. Well, I would love to talk about some of your choices of adventure. I obviously, you've done just a vast array from everything from the hardcore, you know, thing that any manly man would want to do, all the way to these really bizarre, really goofy, if you don't mind me saying that, and just kind of quirky thing challenges that you do. I've also seen you say you have millions of ideas, you know, literally thousands of ideas. How do you start to want to pursue some of the things that you eventually do and then eventually make films about?
Well, I like the fact that you've got, you know, and I've sort of followed a trajectory of classic adventure down to this reinvention of it by my own means, in a sense. And when I say my own means, that's trash too. You know, there's been so many people who have wonderful ideas across the years. I am attracted to the quirky and the small and the sort of incidental ideas now more because, one, I can do more of them. So it's more bang for my buck in this hours of the week type thing. Two, they make you sort of question what it is you're doing. And so when you to go off on those big classic adventures, they're often gear intensive. They're often skilled. They're in faraway places.
Freaking expensive too.
They're freaking expensive. And they tend to, I mean, they're so privileged, you know, and I don't like to use that word much, but I'm a really lucky dude and I know it, but it's taken me 20 years of adulthood to really realize just how lucky I am. So I just want to do some more humble things that still are challenging and hard and critical and beautiful and make me question things like wilderness or adventure or hardship or whatever. You know, get your melting pot of adventure, bung them all in a bucket and come out with something that's more simplistic, more sustainable, isn't expensive, and I reckon that's a hell of a challenge. And that's what I've been trying to do, you know, like walking to work. You know, I came home with $6 in my pocket. You know, I found $14.50 on the side of the road, and that's what I ate with, and that's what, and that film's going to come out later this year. And I still to this day, that's been my most revolutionary adventure, in that that was 36 hours of a really quite a challenging task. I came home with more money than I left with, and it was everything that, you know, a 5-month paddle around Africa in some respects gave me, you know. So the power of perception is epic, and I'm trying to follow that lead.
You know, that I love that you mentioned that. I watched the trailer for that one, and for folks that don't know, you essentially your 50-kilometer commute to Melbourne to the university, you decided to walk it one day, and you did the bare minimum. You had this threadbare shirt, you know, just some basic pants, and you started off barefoot. Did you do the whole thing barefoot? I can't remember if you did. If you
no, there's a Yeah, that's a really good indicator of how soft and white my feet are. You know, I lasted 8 kilometers, and then I ended up having to walk on the white lines because they were the softest part of the road. And then when the white line ran out, I thought, no, I'm stuffed. So I had a backup pair of shoes with one of the cameramen. So that was it. But that was a wonderful trip, you know. Walked to work. It took 2 days, or, you know, I did it overnight, and it was just under 90 kilometers or about 50 miles. And, I was hungry. I was thirsty. I was, you know, I was sort of exposed by the roadside. But it was an excellent experience. And in many respects, it was as hard as doing kind of a mountaineering route in some respects, you know.
Well, in one way, it's easier legit on paper. It looks easier, but I think there's something to be said when you do these adventures that doesn't have the culture and doesn't have kind of the encouragement behind it. You know, there's no guidebook for walking to work. There's a guidebook for Kilimanjaro, for any mountain you want to do, any trail you want to do. And it's encouraged. There's people that's done it. You know, we moved to a place that really doesn't have this kind of outdoor culture like I was used to. And honestly, the wilderness here, although not as daunting terrain-wise, it feels so much more daunting from maybe a social support perspective. You know, walking along an interstate, a highway for 50 kilometers, that you have to feel exposed just like you would on a mountain in a way.
Yeah, that's excellent. And Mason, you've nailed it with you know, we often do adventures because they are encultured with us, and we think that these are the sort of things that are going to tap us into ourselves. You know, in many ways, adventure and the genre adventure, particularly nowadays because we can Google everything, is the search for the existential self. We're not looking for gold or a particular tree species, or not many of us anyway. You know, we're not looking for the natural world as much anymore, or even to find another type of culture. We're looking for another kind of culture in ourself, you know, this existential search of the self. And when you go off the rule book to go and find that, there's 10 things a day that people could do that are completely off a rule book and no one's really ever done or thought of or done in the particular way you might be spinning it. And I think that's empowering. And the difference is between, I suppose, myself and a lot of others is that I actually go and do these things. And I think a lot of people think them, but they think, no, because why would you do that when I can go and do a classic form of the genre, you know, right, which is prettier and more accepted and still fantastic, right? But it's been commodified by that point, and it's different, you know. It has different values to it.
This might be leading, you know, too much into the film, but how did you, you know, this was when you had the commute, the same commute every day. How did you look at your commute different after this experience? So was it, were you constantly saying, this is where this happened, this is where that happened? Because you're going to, you know, you're encapsulated in your car. There's only so much you're going to experience. But out there, I mean, what did it make you see the normal in this unnormal perspective? How did that change, if that makes sense?
Well, they're still so different as well, because you're dead right. A car is an absolute capsule. And one of the failings of a car, which makes them so brilliant, is that they really are a time machine, in that you get in there and they're warm or cool, and they have radio or music or your podcasts or, you know, And yes, you've got to put your foot on the gas and get places and make a few decisions to go left or right and put on the brake at a certain time. But for the most part, you've got your mind the whole time on whatever distraction you choose to distract it with. Whereas when I walked to work or paddled to work, I couldn't really be distracted. I had to keep my mind on the landscape or the seascape or what was around me or how I had to navigate things. And it was so different. It was so drastically different. So I certainly thought about it. You know, I've traveled those roads for years after, because I actually filmed the walk and the paddle 3 or 4 years ago now. And then every time I'm in a car and there might be a little glimmer of, oh, there's the patch I passed, or, oh, that tree no longer exists that blocked my way that particular time, you know. So I had little flashbacks, but for the most part, they were very different commutes, so different to the point where they had very little to do with each other. And the biggest outcome of commuting to work via foot or in my little canoe was just how much we've abused the world, you know. And I don't want to say that to be an activist or a greenie or whatever, but you just see the worst of everything when you see it so intimately, you know. Everything bad ends up in water in some way, you know. All the trash bags and pollution and bad stuff ends up in a creek, and it's the same by a roadside, you know. Everything just ends up at the edge of the road that no one else wants, you know, which is just rubbish and tires and bags of nappies, and, you know, it's gross. And you think, gee, well, you know, I'm part of this big human fabric of doing all these nasty things. And you don't see that as much in the car. And I saw it a lot on foot or in my boat.
Man, that is, you know, I'm a cyclist, so I do see things slower, not as slow as walking, but the side of the road, there's got to be something out there of pictures of things people have found, or just finds, you know. There's got to be a store out there of folks that sell things that they've only found on the side of the road, because it's unbelievable what you see. And you're right, that's a great way to put it.
You're right.
But man, another one of your great adventures that I love is Run the Line, where you find this old kind of the evidence of an old railway that went through your town, went through your hometown, and kind of went in this area. Something that people, you know, no one's probably ever thought about in 50 years. You know what I mean? And you created this entire film that's hugely popular on YouTube about following that as close as possible, seeing the evidence of it. You know, when I open my book of possible adventures right now in my life with a one-year-old, with moving, with just our jobs and everything, the list of what I think adventure is, or what I think most people think adventure is, that book is maybe half a page of the things I can do right now. But when you put it in the frame of what you've done with the commute and with Run the Line, it's now a book full of possible adventures. It's incredible. And so when I watched that, I immediately thought of literally a railway in my hometown, and I thought, I have no idea where that goes. I know it's never been used or hasn't been used in my lifetime, but that is something that I could go do one week and do this. And so all that to say, I just really love the way you've done that, and love the way you've encouraged people to think about these things that might be forgotten as a way to have really a life-changing adventure as valuable as climbing Everest, if not more so.
Yeah, thanks, Mason. I think a lot of people, particularly the locals, a lot of locals love that, because it's bought a little piece of their area, you know. It's given a story and another breath of life, in a sense. And funnily enough, the local councillor or the local government is surveying the line again to potentially open it up as a rail trail. Now, I think, you know, it'd take a decade if they were going to do that, but the wheels are in motion, and there's a lot of people that want to make it happen. So if I was a small part of that, which I think I have been, you know, there's been a lot of people say, yep, let's open this thing up again. I think that's, as a form of recreation and for people to follow this line, it's great. And you're right, the Western world particularly, there are so many railway lines and tram lines and old wayfaring routes out there that are super interesting, and they're layered up with history. And unless we go in search of these things that are becoming grown over and whatnot, they'll get lost, and someone will know about them, but not a lot. And that's a shame. So, yeah, and they're right for the picking for adventures.
Absolutely, man. And what it does is it becomes, it all of a sudden turns someone like me who's in a position to say, there's only so much I can do right now until I start thinking about adventure in that way. Then all of a sudden, the world is my oyster again in this stage of life to say, there's a million things I can go do right now. I just have to look at it in that way. I mean, I could go out my back door and have some crazy adventure like you do. Just you say, I'm going to wear no shoes and try to walk to my mom's house or something that's 100 miles away. I mean, there's just literally a million things you could start to choose from. So for you, what are some of the things you try to look for with your next project?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. My book comes out next year. It's called The Backyard Adventurer. And in many respects, the manuscript is mostly done, and that'll go off to the printers by Christmas. And the big wrestle with that manuscript was, what is the point of adventure? You know, my PhD was about that, about in many respects critiquing what adventure is, particularly in the modern era, once we know where gold and nutmeg is and how wide the seas are and how deep they are. So what's this idea of adventure now? What are we filling or fulfilling within the human psyche? And so I'm very interested in that. So when I set out now, I very much, it's very organic. And for me to actually list why I go and do things or what I'm after is sometimes really actually hard, because I'm thought, you know, I kind of know what I'm looking for, and it has a certain set of ingredients. And look, in the most simplistic way, I think it's still got to challenge me physically. You know, I still really want to breathe hard, or I want to breathe for a long time, or I want to continue. My body has to be moving for a long time in many respects. And yet, even saying that to you now, it flies in the face of, I recently spent a night up a tree which overlooks the house, and I'm not even sure that was adventure, right? But it was still really fun, and it was still challenging to get 10 meters up in a particular part of the tree with ladders and ropes and make it safe enough. I had to bust my ass to do it. And so, you know, they're all very different in a sense, and you wouldn't necessarily be able to have a really set ingredients list for each of these things I'm doing. But yeah, they have to be challenging. They have to be fun. I have to be really curious about what it is I'm doing. And it has to fit around my wife and my child and other life too. I can't bugger off now for months at a time. I think it's just too selfish. So, or even weeks, right? So I've got to make these things sustainable. And no doubt it will change the older I get.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible. That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode. I love that. Sleep in a tree. That gave me, I would love to try to do that. Just a few weeks ago, I decided to sleep on our front porch, and you know, nothing crazy, but just laid out there with the dogs, and we all slept out there, ended up looking at the stars all night. And it was just a slight change of perspective, a slight stimulation of the brain, of the emotions, of the, oh man, this is a little bit uncomfortable. But then I'll go weeks without doing it. So it has been very inspiring to kind of watch some of your films and kind of let that creativity sink back in and say, you don't have to go out for 70 days, for 2 months, or whatever it is to have these life-changing experiences. You can chip away at a life-changing experience one little moment every day at a time. And so with your book, Backyard Adventure, is it mostly, you know, talking about some of the things you've done as well as how to think this way? What can the reader expect?
Yeah, I'm super allergic to making rule books or giving advice in a sense. I'm pretty crap at it. And two, I sort of steer clear of it because I think people can find out, you know, we're having a chat today because something in my films, tickled your fancy. And so here we are having this conversation, and lo and behold, you're a similar kind of character. You know, think of how many people would think, oh, geez, I'd like to sleep on my porch one day and look up at the stars. And 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000 people actually does it. So the fact that you've done that, you know, and it's just this quirky thing of dragging a mattress out or, you know, a bedroll onto your front porch and bam-o, you've got yourself a really cool evening.
Yeah, that's fine.
So it's so simple to just do something so invigorating, you know, or to give you that perspective puller. Yeah, I mean, the backyard adventure is just telling stories, and people will read those stories. And if I'm worth my salt as a storyteller, people will read the story and think, oh, you know what? I might have a go at that. And even if they don't, they might have just read a good story. And so I'm not pretending to be anything but a storyteller. And it's very easy to make lists and to, you know, and to say, okay, this bloke did this. I would like to do something in a similar way. You know, that's telling them how to suck eggs if I made a list. So people are really good at joining the dots, you know. So I hope that comes across in the book. I have a few rant and raves about the local council when they cut down too many trees, but that's just being a bit of a greenie, you know.
Hey, you gotta protect the places you love, you know. So gotta fight for
them. Yeah, that's right.
You know, I mean, there's just so many directions we could take our conversations. You've done so many cool and interesting things. Have you heard from anyone recently, maybe on YouTube or something quirky you maybe inspired somebody to do, or they credit you to have helped inspire?
Well, I'm only really just starting to kick into the YouTube thing, and hopefully that becomes more of a thing in the next few years. But I really like the platform because it makes you accountable to your audience. You know, people very much vote with their feet, even though the YouTube algorithm has an awful lot to do with it. But that in many respects, YouTube is only feeding an algorithm based on viewership anyway. You know, so if it has a spike and it's a relatively friendly spike and people are giving it lots of likes and lots of viewing minutes per episode, that they bolster it. And so it tends to reward you for making good content. In any case, I get truckloads of feedback from it, right? And it helps me think about how I shape the next film in a way. So I'm influenced by that. A mile an hour where I run around my block, I've got a perfect mile-long block. And during my PhD when I was in lockdown for that, I was thinking, gee, I just want to be outside running and doing things. And that was how the idea started for a mile an hour. And that's my most popular idea and film to this point. And that's been copied all over the world now for charities and events. COVID's kind of shut things down a bit, but, you know, the World Wildlife Fund in the UK and Surf Life Saving in Australia has picked it up. They've got a few events happening, you know, and people are doing it all over the place in their street and in their towns. And it's been remarkable. And I never in my wildest dreams, Mason, thought that people would take it on as a charity event or as anything, let alone repeat it. So that's been really endearing.
I guess it's just such a format for people. I don't think a lot of people want to take on the challenge of eating beans for 40 days, but or kayaking 2,000 kilometers around Africa. Like, that's inspiring, but it's unrelatable. The beans challenge, yeah, I just don't think people want to do it. Right.
No, but, you smack on. You've nailed it. You know, people want a sort of a skeleton of how to do something. That's why people diet, I suppose, or they go to the gym, because it gives them a prescription. And a mile an hour is very prescriptive, right? You're going to run a mile an hour every hour. At the top of the hour, you're going to run around your block. And you might only do it for 6 hours or 12.
Do you make it a requirement? Not a requirement, but just like make it the part of the challenge to fill that with productivity like you did right in between the hours?
Yeah. Yeah. And look, and I think people have, I've had so much feedback from people around the world, and some of them, particularly the ones that have loved it the most, like really they loved it because they did things they enjoyed as well in between rather than things they think they need to get done. I did mostly things I enjoyed and a few things that I thought, oh, you know, I've been putting off. But that was really important. You've got to make these things fun and then it's sustainable. And you know what? You're your own inspiration at the end of it, and it's brilliant.
I loved it. I mean, it's such great. I mean, you've heard the accolades, so I won't sit here and repeat it, but it was just an amazing idea. And of course, I'm going to ask everyone to go check this out. They're extremely watchable, not too much of a time commitment. They're all under an hour, and most of them, heck, under half an hour. And so it's a really cool medium. And so what's cool, you said you liked YouTube. I actually read the other day that YouTube is the healthiest. It's the most positive social media platform for your mental health, because it isn't this constant comparison between you and someone else, or constant feedback of someone else's life. It's a lot of people doing a lot of how-to, doing a lot of long-form, just basically expressing an idea through film. And it's one of the most uplifting and positive forms of social media. And so I thought that was interesting. And you're kind of confirming that with your content, too.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad you told me that, too. I want to be repeating that to when I have conversations with people. And I totally agree with you as well, because you don't go to YouTube for any kind of negative content. You know, I know that when and I don't want to compare and contrast in a sense, but when I'm laying next to my wife in bed, she'll often be on her feed of Facebook or Insta or something.
Oh, yeah. Same here.
And a lot of the content is news content or negative content, or people have done bad things. And it's very much driven by, because it's easier to tell a negative story than it is a positive one. We know that with news feeds around the world and whatnot. And so, yeah, it's really good to hear that, and good on you, YouTube, for people for making it that platform. I think it's good.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I spend a lot of time on YouTube, honestly, and it's and I was getting kind of worried. I'm like, am I on YouTube too much? And then, you know, like you said, I lay in bed and scroll through Instagram for a little bit. I never feel good when I get off Instagram, ever. No matter how positive the interaction was, I just never feel that great. It's like eating junk food or something. It was good going down, but I just don't walk away feeling great. With YouTube, I often walk away saying, well, now I know how to change that in the car, because I'm looking something up, or I watch something like your film, and it's 20 minutes of, 20 minutes in today's world is like spending 6 hours doing something with how short our attention spans are. So it's almost like this meditative experience as corny as that sounds, watching a 25-minute film, but you know what I'm saying? It's like I really get to dive into what you're doing, experience it, watch it, see it, get inspired by it, and it fuels this creativity. And there's so many great creators on the platform. So I encourage you, man. I'm excited for you. I think I would venture to say, tell me if I'm wrong, but I bet, just from personal experience, getting a PhD in outdoor leadership and teaching it all the time, I would bet that you weren't able to get on a lot of adventures during that time yourself. And now I imagine you will be able to.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, the small baby is going to put a spanner in the works in some respects. But yeah, she's going to come right along. So we were supposed to be in the desert at the moment doing a 2-week hike in the Northern Territory up near Uluru. But of course, we can't because of COVID and all the borders are locked. But yeah, over summer we're planning on going on a big hike for, you know, a couple hundred miles, and she'll just be packed along, and you know, we'll stop every 90 minutes and she can crawl around and eat gum leaves and explore the world, and I'm really excited about that, to take our daughter on a real bushwalk. It'll be just brilliant, you know. And I tell you that the latest project, which I look forward to being in contact with you in 3 or 4 months' time when it comes out, Mason, is I've made my wife a cabin during COVID, and for the most part, she didn't know I was making it. I kept having to lie and tell her I was doing other things, but I've made her a cabin at the top of my paddock or our paddock, and I told her that I was making a wood rack to dry wood and whatnot. Anyway, she wanders up one day when I'd spent too long up there, and lo and behold, there's a cabin. And so that was self-filmed, and that's going to be a really slow burn project, as in it's not Bo talking to the camera much. It's just you see this thing grow out of junk materials, and it was a really satisfying film project. And I look forward to that coming out, and I think that speaks to what you've been talking about. It's kind of like the how-to of YouTube, but a story as well. And with a great soundtrack, it's going to be fun.
That's exciting, Bo. And that was actually going to be one of my last questions, is, you know, what you got going on next. And, you know, and also for folks that don't know, man, you have a real passion for not wasting. You hate waste. And so you do a lot of things with reuse things, with used stuff, or just making things out of junk. And so so all that to say, man, you make this idea of adventure, unlike a lot of people, you make it very approachable. You make it very, I can look out my backyard right now and say, there's something out here I can do. that connects me with this greater world of adventure. So I commend you for that. And I'm excited to talk to you. I'd love to talk to you again. But we talked about your book, talked about your next projects. Anything else going on?
Oh, well, not a lot. I mean, there should be another 4 to 5, maybe 6 if I pull my finger out, films out by Christmas time. So, yeah, it's just a bit of a YouTube bonanza, I hope to be. Myself and we've got a real exciting project for next year that just got up with YouTube and Google. So there'll be more about that in the new year. Yeah, man, it's just going full tilt at this idea of storytelling and trying to make good stories that are good for you and me and maybe even the world, you know. So, but without even trying to do that, you know, I'm not that righteous nor that perfect. So it's just about going about my business. But
It's
exciting, mate, and it's been nice chatting.
Yeah, absolutely. So The Backyard Adventure is coming out March 1st, 2021, and it's on pre-sale now at BeauxMiles.com, correct?
Yeah. You can go to Brio Books, the publisher, or just any, you type in Beau Miles and it'll lead to it. And I'll steer you in the, you know, send me an email. Heck, I'll get you a copy somehow. But yeah, the pre-sales, they're pretty fun. They're pretty pricey to, we don't have a US publisher yet. So they're going to be sent direct from Australia with a kangaroo postage stamp for a fair few bucks, but it comes with my signature if nothing else.
There you go, brother. Well, great. Well, Beau, man, I appreciate you making some time for the Adventure Sports Podcast, and feel like I talked a lot, so my apologies for that. Didn't ask a ton of questions. But man,
no, you did a cracking job, Mason. It was nice.
Oh, good, man. If you're ever stateside, let me know. I'd love to go out paddling with you. I just got a kayak, so we'll have to go. But all right, man. Well, until next time, keep up the great work. I'm looking forward to seeing your films.
Good beard, Mason. Thanks, mate. I'll chat to you down the track.
Yes, sir. All right. See you, Beau.
Bye.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.